And I cast Invigorate, and my opponent's like tanking forever, and I'm like, what the fuck are they tanking about? Like, either you like counter it, or your Tarmogoyf dies, and then it resolves, and I'm like, oh, it's because I targeted the Tarmogoyf, not my Glistener Elf. That's why they were thinking, like, what the fuck is this idiot doing? And then my Glistener Elf died, and then I scooped up that game.
I'm on sneak again. Yeah, sneak attack. Ooh. Ooh, ooh.
Threshold, the Legacy podcast, selling all our reserve list cards to buy GameStop stock.
You didn't lie. That is relevant.
Up and to the right. Up and to the right, Jeff. How you doing today?
Good. How you doing, Quinn?
Pretty good. McBain, how are you doing?
I'm not doing as well as my brother, who definitely made a lot of money off the GameStop stock.
Actually?
Ooh. Actually. He messaged me one day. So he wrote it up. I think he made like 50K at first.
Oh my God.
What?
he was up. I think he cleared, like, by the time he was out of everything, I think he said he was up $75,000 or $80,000 inside his TFSA, like his tax free savings account. And I was just like, you, sir, are a madman. And he's just like, I'm a genius. I'm like, no, you're not, but you're lucky as hell.
That is not the scope of the amount that I thought you were going to tell us.
No, he was like, he didn't need a chair because his balls were so big that he could just sit on them. Like, I was like, I like, my risk tolerance is not even like approximating that. That was, yeah.
I was talking to a friend of mine on, I think, like Saturday on the weekend, and it was like, you know, stuff was like just kind of starting to pop off, and he's like kind of, I think he works in something with like finance, so he's like kind of around in this, and he does more like general stock trading than like really anybody that I know, just like normal stuff. And I was just telling him about it because at the time it was just this like funny, you know, Reddit thing where it's like, haha, this thing's blowing up and there's some kind of, you know, short squeeze, I don't understand these terms. And it went from, you know, like what, like $40 at the start of the week to like, I think it was like $60, $70 at the time or something. And he was, you know, that's crazy. He's like, I'm gonna just look into this for fun. And he messaged me today and he's like, I should have just bought some. Cause like as of right now, it's at like 150 American. Like, it's mental.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. I remember my brother telling me about it, and he had gotten in at like $12 or $13 or something like that. And it had jumped to like 30 or 40. And I was like, dude, this company, like I looked at like what the company was and everything. And I was like, this is a joke. Like there's nothing here. This is like the Nikola stock or any of this Robin Hood stuff all
Nikola,
over again.
You mean Tesla?
No, the electric trucking company. Anyway, but I was just like, dude, this is not something that you want to be like, if you've already made a whole bunch of money, like get out, like don't participate in this. Cause it's going to fall apart. I'm sure he's regretting listening to me now because he could have been probably a millionaire at this point, but like at the same time, it was just like the riskiest behavior I've observed in a while.
See, I don't know how you guys are built. I'm curious, actually. But like, if this is me and I get into this, well, it's a good thing that the things that I invest in that are raising in value, I have no intention of selling. You know, my awful collection of dual lands, like they go up, sure, I'm just going to keep them. But like, if I bought into GameStop, say it's $10 when I buy in, as soon as it gets to like 30, I'm like losing my mind and I'm getting out. Like, I'm not going to be one of these guys holding on until, you know, it's 1,000 or whatever.
It like depends how much I put in.
That's true.
And I think I would have put in a sufficiently small amount of money that I would have been like, I'm going to ride this a little longer. You know, like if I saw it at like $10 and like I just like went back and read like actually like I was like I wouldn't have it because I'm not on that Reddit or have never seen it before today. It's like $10, I'd have been like, eh, like $100 in. And I would like still have that $100 in right now, I'm pretty sure. Cause I'd just be like, whatever, just let's go.
Right. Yeah, that's fair.
That's $100 I would have expected to lose, you know?
Right. So you just put it in the slot machine and see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's not really sure. I don't know if that's really investing, like it's $100, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't really investing either.
I think that's kind of what everybody's doing is like, well, sure, I'll just put a couple $100 in.
Yeah. It feels a lot different when you're putting larger sums in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, anytime I'm doing any investing and you're like, okay, I'm going to buy this and like the number's like fairly large, you're just like, oh boy, it's like, ooh.
Listen to these like coded humble brags. I'm doing investing and you have the numbers that are quite large.
Anyway, not as big as my brother's, but that was some risky behavior. Awesome.
I mean,
all I have is dual lands. I bought a volcanic island on the weekend. That's probably doubled in price at this rate.
Oh yeah.
Anyway, so we're not the financing legacy podcast,
regrettably.
We're GameStop podcast. Although we wish we were.
We've still got honest jobs, and in fact, Jeff, you have an honest job called housekeeping.
I do. My second source of employment. I have something for housekeeping. You thought that the super qualifier last week was it, but it's not. There's another one. Saturday, February 13th at 7 a.m. So 7 a.m.
That's respectable.
On a Saturday this time. So better than the Thursday. I suspect, given how they've done the super qualifier this time, because it's the same thing. It qualifies for the Kaldheim like arena PT or whatever it is. So, I mean, that reads to me like there's going to be another like God account period there. Right? I mean, am I crazy to believe that?
No. I mean, I think it probably depends how this one went.
I think it went pretty good. I don't think there's the buzz.
I guess, like I guess we'll talk about that later, right?
Yeah. Anyways, Saturday, February 13th, 7 a.m. I hope if they do change one thing, they reduce the entry a bit from this one. This one's a little steep. Needing two of those tokens is, you know, $50 American is a little rough.
So the tokens are my token's active because I just got the token. If you entered with two tokens.
Yeah.
But like you still have the God account though.
Yeah. So they had a little FAQ on the page too. And it's just like the act of buying the token basically sets that flag for your account in the database. It doesn't matter.
And then the flag, they just turn out the flag for everybody after.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so look forward to that. I don't have to take any time off for this one, which will be good. And maybe I'll do better.
There's like a binary in a SQL table that was coded in like the year 2000 to make it Y2K compliant. And they just flick that bad boy on.
Oh yeah. I even doubted SQL. It's probably something good like DB Vista or I don't know.
I have no idea what you guys are saying. All I heard was Y2K in there somewhere.
You know, somebody's probably just running Microsoft Access on like a little, you know, Windows 98 computer.
That's like that, two, I know what that is.
Two hard drives networked together in the corner of the office.
Yeah. Yeah, never unplug that laptop. That is keeping Magic Online afloat.
That's how they stop from getting canceled. It's like, you know, like if Amazon continues to host like Nazis, Mitko, it's just on this box. Don't even worry about it.
That's their anti-Nazi plan.
Yeah. They're not sharing space with anyone bad because nothing else will fit on those computers. And they just, they're in Renton. It's fine.
Yeah, that's housekeeping. That's it.
So did anyone actually play in this? We just had a super qualifier. Quinn, did you actually like play in it? It was the one on like Thursday at like
7 a.m.
Or something like that. Yeah.
I have a job, so I couldn't.
So do I. So I couldn't.
I also like how you like manufactured the situation of a question you know the answer to. But I'm going to keep going like I didn't say that. Jeff, you also have a job. So I guess none of us played?
One would think so. But I have a job that allows me to shift all of my time and work to other periods in order to make space for this. So I did just that. Freed up my Thursday morning.
Like, and, like just so I'm clear, it's like you can shift a few hours. So it's like you can O2 drop and then like go back to work.
Well, is that like I didn't even lose anything.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify. I didn't think you were like shifting a whole day or anything like that. It was just
like pure efficiency.
An hour and a half.
just the time you felt like you needed.
Yeah.
I'm going to forge ahead and ignore the bullies on this chat. Myself and frenemy of the show, Elliot, we had spun up a Google Meet open link in the Slack, and the two of us are playing. I was playing D&T. I was trying to be slightly spicy and adding in a Mangara to the main board. So I was looking around at all of, you know, a lot of rug going on. It's pretty slow. And, you know, look, you're taking like one Skyclave for a Mangara. It should work. I never drew it all like tournament.
Civilian Mangara, right?
Oh, good Mangara.
Not after she became part of the government.
The origins of D&T Mangara. I never even drew it. So disappointing. And Elliot was playing Dew's Naya Maverick. And the day didn't go very well for either of us. You know, I'm not going to get into it.
It was like 65th, wasn't he? He just missed the...
He did okay.
He just missed the cash? Yeah.
He did okay, but the spirits were down.
I popped into the Google Meet when I had like between meetings. And yeah... At no point did either of you seem particularly happy.
I think that's kind of where the format's at, you know? Like we're just like playing and we're like, yeah, cool. Like, I think I'm winning. Or like, oh, I lost. That's like, there's nothing really exciting happening. I mean, maybe we're both not playing blue decks, so you kind of run into like the bad side of variance more often than not, but yeah.
I feel that's like usually what you're saying though. Like bad side of variance, you're not having that much fun. Like you dropped at X and five or something. Like was there something particular about today that like or about your event that like really hit it home for you? Like did you go up against a bunch of like snow decks or something? Or
not even. Just I played against I beat Grixis Delver and Blue Red Delver. Of note, the Blue-Red Delver was when I was X3, and I won the first game through just, like, Thalia, Wasteland Port. I think they cast one spell, and then they just conceded the match, which is like, yeah, okay, that's respectable.
That's beautiful.
And then I lost to Oops, Doomsday, the Mirror, which that was the first match of the day, and I was like, I'm so rusty playing this deck, and I should have slept more, because that's like, I love the Mirror, and Bug Shadow. And those were just like, it just felt like, I mean, if you look at the matches that I lost, two of them are just like, there's nothing I can do. Like Doomsday and Oops, like, you know, either they have it, they don't. Like I can maybe kind of interact a bit. And that's just it. And Bug what? Shadow is just Oko crushing me constantly.
Oh, because they have Oko. It's going to be like Bug Shadow must be generally close.
Shadow itself is pretty good. You end up playing kind swords, of weird right? dance where you like, yeah, swords is great. And then even just random stuff like Flicker Wisp or like Mom just like Stonewall so much. Bug Shadow is also playing Liliana the Last Hope. When's the last time you got killed by that?
Oh, I'm getting like flashbacks.
I like put down, I can't remember what it was, just like something. And I was like, all right, I got, this is stabilizing. They can't get through this. And they're just like, last hope.
I'm being a flashback to like Josh Monk or like Tim Wilder, just like looking at me and be like, I guess tick up and gesturing at my only creature and me being like, let's put this over here.
Yeah, just brutal.
Jeff, how does the D&T, what is your D&T plan? Like, how does that necessarily like play out? No, but just like in like a D&T versus Doomsday matchup, like how does it, is it just like, I want to play Thalia and like cross my fingers and port in Wasteland to you? Or is there like
extremely hard? Because you really need to be fast. And they just have, they can afford to take the time. And just about everything they do goes over the top of what you're doing. You know, even playing like three Spirit of the Labyrinths main, like doesn't do anything. Doomsday can still make a pile where they don't care about Spirit. And playing Thalia, more often than not, you're locked out of, not that it's good, but like Swords or something game one, you know, where you have to force them to like go for the zero card pile. It's not a great matchup. I'd rather play against Storm, I think, because they usually have to spend a bit more time like sculpting. Because Doomsday, like once they have, you know, Doomsday and like a ritual or mana or whatever, like they know they can go for it and sculpt a way to win out of it. Even if it's a slow pile.
Like they could just take two or three turns if you're not, if you don't have enough pressure. Whereas like, Storm, it's like one turn. One turn, I got to go through this Thalia or something.
Yeah, because even like I've been playing a lot of Delver and like it feels scary, but usually it's like, the majority of the game is before the Doomsday, and there's like a little iota of game afterwards where sometimes it's like, oh, I've been sandbagging this lightning bolt and I'm going to like bolt Arcanist them or something. But usually it's like all before the game, but based on like the Thalia and the Spirit, like a bunch of the interactions, it feels as though they could just jam the Doomsday and then stack and just kind of like slowly play through the turns, and there's like you're not going to be clocking them, so they can just, there's no burn coming. The worst that you're going to do is like attack with like a Thalia and a Spirit, and they're like, I got two turns, like it's fine.
The best thing you can actually do in those spots, and this happened because I mean, I think in one of the games they went like turn one Doomsday, and you know, you're just like, well, this is trouble. The best thing you can try to do usually is like attack their mana there and kind of, because you know, once they resolve Doomsday, if they don't have that many lands in play, like you've between Thalia and like Wasteland or Port, you might actually be able to keep them off just casting things they need to cast, like depending how they made their stack. So you end up with these choices too where you have to try to decide if you're going for like the LED they resolved with like a Apparition or something, or if you're gonna like waste them off their lands, because then it depends what they did with their stack. So you play this kind of like 50-50 games, but you're, I mean, you're disadvantaged in this shell game. So I don't know, it doesn't feel good. I don't think there's really much to be done about it.
Oh, that's such like a theme of Doomsday. You're disadvantaged in this shell game. There's nothing you can do about it, but play on.
Doomsday's really strong. It's very strong. And like the fact that they can afford to shift to like kind of a control deck is really annoying.
It's super hard. Like from a Delver player's perspective, it feels like a really difficult matchup, because like anytime you're actually trying to like zoo them out and like put a bunch of creatures down, that means your like counterspell wall is totally down. Mm-hmm. You might have like a daze, maybe a Force of Will, but often they can just fight right through it, or they just arrest you. Like it's the one deck that feels like discard is just backbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
All the other decks are doing like this whole Veil thing or whatever, but they feel like the old combo decks of yore where they were just like duress and you're just like, oh no.
It's like the deck where you're like, should I force this Thoughtseize? It's so bad, but should I force this Thoughtseize? Because if they see my hand, it's over.
It's not even if they take something, it's if they just know what I have. They know how sad I am.
I always snap off those forces. I'm just like, I'm just going to represent five good cards.
Yeah, because it's like that force is either going in the graveyard and they're like, yeah, coast is clear, or you force it and you're like, try me, I guess.
I think Doomsday is probably, I mean, there's a bunch of tier lists going around this week, people posting for fun. I think Doomsday is clearly like in the top three decks, certainly the top combo deck, because it can just do whatever. Like, you know, it takes up relatively few slots, like put Doomsday in there. So you can go like the max, like Dreadheart Arcanist. You can go like Esper, like Teferi. You can just go, you know, hard on control, hard on combo. Like Personal Tutor, even somebody was posting, I mean, it's a meme, but the Leyline of Anticipation Doomsday, like, you know, you can just shove that in any direction you want. And playing against it, you can't really tell what flavor, you know, you're getting shoved down your throat. So it's very like hard to deal with.
The Miracle decks of old, where you weren't really sure if they were going to bring in Mentors or not. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of left, like, leaving a bunch of potentially dead cards in. And I still haven't really figured out how to sideboard that matchup most effectively, but it's almost like the Delver combo deck, where they're just like, you got a good matchup against everyone. You can play whatever game plan you need to play. If you need to be the control deck, if you need to be aggro and just fire off Doomsday turn one, like, you can do that. You've got all these counter spells to play around, whatever you need to play around. And like, you can big brain it all you want. Like, it's a really cool deck. And like, the moment Doomsday came back, I was excited to see it back as a deck. I think it's a sweet combo deck. It's a terrifying combo deck, but it definitely has a lot of play to it.
Yeah,
it's not as fun. Like, I'm putting myself in your shoes, Jeff. Like, when they know that they can just turn one Doomsday you, that's a really shitty feeling. Like, at least with like other decks, or like a Delver deck that I've been playing, it's like you have that like flexibility of I have a couple game plans that I might be executing, and you have to respect that.
Mm-hmm.
But anytime like lands, it happened to me all the time, where they're just like, well, I know you can only do these two things, so I'm just gonna jam this down your throat and like you're gonna die, or you might have it. And if you have it, then I'll just like build back up and then kill you later. But it feels way less fun and interactive when they can just jam their Doomsday right away.
The really important thing for the deck too, that I think is kind of like it's not under the radar, it's not like it's a secret, but like the fact that when you're making your piles, like usually depending what it is, you know, like half of your draw spells are just cycling. Like, you're either playing Edge of Autumn or Street Wraith. So like, you can't stop it like you normally would with like against Storm or playing like Canonist. Like, they can just, after resolving a Doomsday, like, if it's a turn later, they can just win through a Canonist. Like, it doesn't matter, you know, just between like LED cycle, like, you know, okay, my one spell is Oracle. There you go. So I don't know. It's a strong deck. If anybody has any suggestions about what to, you know, if there's some secret D&T thing I'm not thinking about, I'm open. My DMs are open.
I think the secret is to change all 75 cards in your deck, except maybe Plains if it's snow covered, into a completely different deck, and you've got a good matchup. It seems like if World Gorger combo were as good as we want it to be.
Yes, that's a very good example.
Like, you play the game until you don't, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, I mean, I think a lot of combo decks, you grind until you can't anymore. Just Doomsday is much better at the grind part, and it's so hard to interact with the combo once Doomsday actually resolves.
Yeah. But my highlight of the day, on one hand, was everybody kind of popping in our Google Meet throughout the day. You know, I think you came in, Quinn. We had appearance from both Tristans. But the real highlight of that Google Meet call was Tristan calling in from his job as a teacher. And, you know, it was in between classes or whatever. And he had us, you know, he's watching us, and he's like, oh, I got to go. It's starting up again. And he didn't mute himself. And just getting to hear, teacher voice Tristan be like, all right, come on in, put away your phones. Everybody sit down and relax. That was like a totally different lens to view this friend in.
He showed us his wall of like wholesome memes. Like, there was like the Drake pointing meme, and it was like running in the halls, and it's like Drake's making the face, and then it's like walking in the halls and Drake's pointing and smiling. I was like, is that even funny for kids? I don't know, but like, I respect that you're trying to teach them some discipline, I guess.
I like there's still like the Ned Stark meme up there too, which is like at the time when Game of Thrones was even still popular towards the end, like the meme was already outdated, and now not only is it outdated, Game of Thrones is like largely reviled. And the like kids in like middle school.
I guess he must know their eye. Like they, I don't know if kids should be watching it or not, but I guess they must. Maybe they just know the memes.
It has to be tongue in cheek. That's probably it. Yeah. Oh, it's bearded man with a sword meme. We need other legacy teachers to tell us about their memes. Dead format cast next episode, please.
Someone else is a teacher too, right?
Like both Brian and Phil are teachers as well.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah.
And it really shows in their like show, like how they do their show notes and structure and everything like that. You're like, you guys are teachers.
Well, yeah, you look at the show notes and they're all in fucking Latin.
Exactly.
I think that's what Phil teaches.
That is.
Yeah. yeah, there you go. There was my tournament. I quit at 2-4. And the highlight was a friend yelling at kids.
That's an amazing highlight. I wish somehow you had like recorded that and we could use it as like the outro or the intro or something.
That would have been amazing.
That would have been incredible.
Just all right. Canadian Threshold listeners, sit down.
Oh man. Maybe he'll do like a sample for us or something like that. Like he'll record it one day. Maybe tomorrow or the next day we could message him and then like get it in here. Probably not. But
next time I do this with Elliot, maybe I'll just record it on my computer for fun. If you know, for the classic things that come up. The good thing that I have like leaving this though, like I going into this tournament definitely haven't been playing that much Legacy in general lately, and especially not like D&T. I've been like mucking around online with all kinds of random stuff. So I definitely felt like very rusty, especially in the mirror game I had. I just like made so many bad decisions. But I do kind of get a little silver lining walking away for tournament when like I look at the matchups that I had, I think about the games that I lost, and like by like for the most part, they're not like they would have been lost no matter what I did. They're not like, oh, I completely punted all of these. Cause I mean I've had those days and those feel real bad. But like, you know, losing to Doomsday and like oops, like yeah, that's gonna happen more often than not. So I'm trying to hold my head high. I will redeem myself in February.
You still lost the mirror, but
I know
going and that was always when I had the deck. I have most of it again, but when I had the deck, I was just always terrified of the mirror, specifically because like I didn't want to play you in the mirror because it would just be like the slow like Kimura chokehold and I would just die.
The mirror's so good, and it's fucking wild now because of Apparition. Like all the old standbys you have of, you know, like first GTA online, win the game, like now you like want to avoid GTA because like as soon as you put it down they got an Apparition waiting for it and your GTA is gone forever. We could do probably a 3-episode segment on the D&T mirror and I could talk for hours.
So one of the things that I always like to see with these super qualifiers is that it draws out the best of what people have, plus or minus a Mankara. And like that's what people will bring. That's what people will bring to the event. Like they're not going to show up with, you know, like a pet deck that they've played one league with. Like they've actually put some effort into this. Like you can queue for the Mythic Qualifier, Mythic Championship, or Elder Dragon Highlander, Crown Monarch, whatever you want to call it.
Just a huge like, get off my lawn energy there.
But like there is some pretty good EV in this tournament, and like people will bring like the deck that they are really good at or what they think is really well positioned in the metagame. So you kind of get a good sense of, I would view it as like the top 32 and the top 16 and the top 8 as like a good sense of like what's going on and what's healthy and what's not healthy. The last time we saw this was Eternal Weekend, where we saw Snow and Rug Delver just taking over everything. And we had this little glimmer of hope of like, hey, look, D&T, it's up there and it's not just like 1 or 2% of all these other decks. Like it actually had a good showing. But what did the results look like for this event?
Who do you want to take this?
Well, who ended up taking the event down? Anyway,
which one of us is supposed to answer?
You, Quinn.
I like our national flow. That's our
Benny
biggest.
Benny Bo Sneak and Show took it down. I should have looked at this deck ahead of time. I looked at this deck and I forgot. Like
I just pulled the configuration. So this is
it's like the turbo one, right? Yeah, 2 Simian Spirit Guides, 4 Lotus Petals.
4 days.
Like having to turn to a show and tell, and then like, yeah, days your
force. This is like 2015 Sneak Attack.
This is lean and mean. It has a plan. It's not being fancy Sneak Attack.
Sorry if we play on Thursday, Jeff, if you actually show up, but this is what I'm going to run on Thursday.
I need my Tundra to show up before I play on Thursday.
No, you don't. Just play without it. You're fine. You just won't draw it. It's fine. It's this crazy format, Jeff, where you can play cantrips and fetch lands. So, like, not having one of your lands is like, it's the Drake meme where it's like, you know, this is fine. Like, having all your duels? Oh, I don't know.
Explain this meme format to me.
That is not how the Drake meme goes. Having all your duels is still good.
You say like having all your duels? Nah. Having one of your duels? Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying.
Backing out.
I was shocked and also not surprised to see Daniel Gochel take second at this event. Apparently he just got wrecked by Sneak and Show, but having him in second and qualifying, I think it's his third time he's qualified via Legacy, which is insane. But with his stand by Rug Delver, and I've really been following Daniel's style of building the deck and how he plays it and having a lot of success with it. So it was great to see him perform again after winning, or what did he split Eternal Weekend. He split the first Eternal Weekend. He took down a few more challenges after that. I think he top aided another challenge after this weekend. Like, it's just insane to see him put up the numbers with this deck.
I like the addition of the Hooting Mandrels. I know this is always like up and down on the lists, you know, what other card am I going to play, but if it can't be a Nimble Mongoose, I do like the Hooting Mandrels.
Hoots is sweet. The ability to just have one mana and just use it and like to cast it and be able to keep up your whatever, like brainstorm if you need to, is really great. And yeah, I've been loving the deck. I did a little bit of Tarmogoyf, but honestly, Hooting Mandrels is just so much better. It's only when they like submerge it, you're like, oh, I'm never casting this again. But
generally, that's about the only sweet thing I can say about this deck. It's Rug Delver, you know, whatever. But Hooting Mandrels is cool.
Mm-hmm.
I've run into like both online, like they like a mix.
Yeah, you know, no, it's like, it's very undecided. It's either Pyromancer, Tarmogoyf, or Hooting Mandrels. It's kind of like the spice or the variety that you'll experience, if that is such a thing.
I do like that, like, for whatever period of time, like, I guess almost all the time, like, the premier beater in Legacy is, like, a common, like, Delver of Secrets, Hooting Mandrels, or Gourmet Angler, like just a big dumb common.
Well, and that's like, Delver was a mistake.
Yep.
And then
Delving was a mistake.
Delve was a mistake.
Always
yeah.
A mistake. Yeah.
Delve was a mistake with fetch lands. So yeah.
Some people hate that it's actually just like this big dumb idiot that doesn't do anything, and it's just like attack for four.
At least it tramples. It's like the trample thing, though. Like when
the trample is so relevant. It's also incredible.
Goyf is the truest big dumb idiot. Like, I respect that it's a good card, but I just fucking hate having to put Tarmogoyf in a deck. Like, great. Like, 2 mana, there's a 3/4. You know, awesome.
With the best thing about Tarmogoyf is when somebody bolts it and it's like a 2/3. And if there's no instant.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh.
That's when Tarmogoyf becomes like not a big dumb idiot. It's genius.
You only need to learn that lesson one time. Everyone, like, or a lot of people have done it, and you never do it again.
Okay, Jeff, Oops came in third. Archer, mm-hmm. what are your thoughts on this deck? You played against it. You've played with it.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a thing that we're fine to have in the Legacy metagame and also like have 15 people playing it?
I mean, I don't know. I don't feel like it should be banned. I don't think it's like a great thing to exist because, I mean, you took like a really fast combo deck that was extremely fragile, which is a great trade-off, you know, and made it so it can actually like do the one thing it couldn't before, which is play lands. So it doesn't have to just turn one. It's very strong. It's very good. And I mean, it says something too, they dropped Belcher from the package, because for a while when this is starting with the lands from Zendikar, they just had both together, right? Just Belcher and Oops shoved in, and you just did whatever one felt good. And now it's just, you know, turbo Oops. And deck's very strong. It feels very bad to lose to. Playing four Veil of Summer's main means that blue players get that feeling too, where they lose on like mm-hmm. turn one and they go, goddamn.
Yeah. At least the deck wins fast. That's one thing that I like about it.
It's very good for paper events for that.
Yeah. I was watching, I think it was the weekend, like the weekend following the Thursday. I was watching Elliot. He was streaming like his green-white deck that he was playing on Saturday, I think. And I tuned in, and he's up against Oops. And they're in sideboard games. And he keeps this ridiculous hand as, like, you've got him. Like, he had Reclaimer so that he could go turn one Reclaimer and then turn two potentially a Bog if he needs to.
Well, that's helpful.
He had turn two Gaddock Teague. Very helpful. On top of that, he had Fairy Macabre. And he's on the play. And I was just like, oh, dude, this is solid. Like, you've got this. So he goes like, okay, Reclaimer, go. And the guy just goes, or the opponent goes, Thoughtseize, take your Fairy Macabre, kill you. And I was just like, and the guy mulled to six. I was just like, this is obnoxious. And Elliot, like, afterwards, he just kind of, he didn't say anything. And he just like kind of stared at the wall. And like, he was on the Google Meets or whatever. And I was like, man, you were assaulting hard right now. He's like, that was, oh, I don't know.
That's yeah, the thing right now by the deck too, is that you can mulligan to like four and win the game. Like the first game I played against this guy, I think they mulled to five game one. And you know, you're kind of like licking your chops. You're like, all right, my hand looks good. I got this. And like, even when you see it's Oops, you know, they play some land or something, you're like, oh yeah, they mulled so low. They didn't kill me turn one. Like, this is fine. And then it's like, no. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's basically taken the spot of like the Eric Landin red black reanimator of 2017, 2018, 2019. That's like fair. I'm sure if he was around right now and grinding Magic Online, he'd just be playing this and he'd have 50 league wins with it. But I don't know. I'm not stoked on the deck. I'd rather other things that aren't as glass cannony, but
well, the thing is it's less glass cannony than it was, right? Like when it's glass cannony, it has a kind of allure about it where you're like, I remember losing to Oops at Eternal Weekend, like actual Eternal Weekend when we went last time, and it was, I don't know, round four or something. And I lost to Oops, you know, in fucking 5 minutes. But like at least then you get to see them go off and you feel like, oh yeah, they had the nuts. You know, they had to maybe say go without doing anything for a turn, and then they just had it. And you're like, yeah, it's a bad matchup, but they worked for that. But as soon as you add the consistency mix to that, I don't know, it turns from like respectably sweet to just like kind of lame.
I've lost to Oops in day two of a GP at X and two. And did the whole thing where you sideboard for the graveyard plan and then they just charbelcher you and it feels way less cool. So I guess this has a little bit more play to it, but anyway.
No, it has.
Well, less back in the day, one last thing about Oops. So back in the day, if they had to go for Belcher, they maybe didn't get to land grant and they just have to YOLO Belcher and be like, I hope I don't hit my Taiga. And like, you know, you got to respect that too, because they're dumping their entire hand. They might end up doing like 15, I guess 16 damage to you if they hit their Tundra or their Tiger.
There's more mechanical things that happen, but there's like like there was a very consequential decision point, yeah, but like what line you're taking. Now there's one line and you just do it, mm-hmm. which is like Rianmer has gotten close to, but there's just so much more ways to interact. I think like the consolation when you lose to Oops is that like I know that my opponent is just as bored as I am, and I'm like, well, you got more rounds of this. I'm gonna do my thing next round, and I'm having fun playing actual games of Magic, and like, you know, do you.
Hey, to be fair, it's probably Nam and he's probably triple queuing. So there's always that, right?
That's honestly the biggest thing for Oops, especially in a Magic Online world, is like time equity. You know, if you don't know the format that well, or you just say I was doing a full work day and I just wanted to join this and like, you know, spend 5 minutes around, like I could queue up work meetings and Oops.
Imagine that.
Better record than I did.
That would be the greatest top eight of all time. I got really paid for a full day at work and I top aided.
Yep. Okay, enough about Oops.
Yeah, and I, to be fair, I don't want to like go through all these decks, but like is there anything that jumps out or that jumped out to you, Quinn, that you wanted to call out or mention?
No, I mean it looks like even like Oops too. It was like a little surprise to see Sneak in show, but other than like because we've seen so much more Omni lately, but like everything else is kind of like usual suspects at this point, I want to say.
There's an anger in the Hogak list. I know that comes up sometimes, but it's sweet.
Angry Gak, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty hasty. I mean, making your Hogak fast when you have to face down an Oko makes sense.
I guess it's no crab Hogak, which is why they can afford to have the anger.
Yeah, it's kind of 2018 or like early days Hogak, honestly.
Anger's like that whole cycle just rules.
There was like a horrendous amount of blue green stew though in the whole thing. Like the amount of Uros and Okos that were prevalent through the top 16 was pretty ridiculous.
I have a sense for what you're doing.
Well, yeah, like maybe we could. Quinn, do you want to introduce our sponsor for today?
Yeah, you keep throwing it to me where I'm like, yeah. I don't know if I'm supposed to talk.
Is that the cut?
Yeah, now a word from our sponsor.
I'm sorry.
Today's episode is brought to you by Blue Stew. Blue Stew makes brewing easy and not a challenge. Blue Stew's mission is to make brewing incredible legacy decks accessible for everyone, not just the bigwigs and their fancy Discord servers. They deliver snowy recipes with auto-included astrolabes, so you never have to worry about colors. Each deck list is guaranteed to have easy-to-follow play patterns and can draw a game out to 40 minutes or more. And all the cards come pre-proportioned exactly right. A one of here, a two of there, nothing gets wasted. Get posted on This Week in Legacy? Let us know, because just by looking at deck lists, we won't be able to tell that you didn't brew it yourself. Go to bluestew.net and use coupon code CANTHRESH to get free shipping. That's right, bluestew.net with coupon code CANTHRESH. Blue Stew, a better way to brew.
How are we getting back into this?
We're just doing it.
Someone's just going to start off on the next section.
I think somebody just goes, wow, that Blue Stew sounds really great. McBain, what do you think about these God accounts? Nailed it.
We could, if we had kept going there, it would have been perfect.
I was waiting for it.
I was thinking that as well, and then I was like, I'm not going to give him the honor.
I feel just like we should keep rolling it here. We should keep that in. We're talking about God accounts now, for those of you who stumbled through that with us. So yeah, there was the super qualifier. Hopefully you knew that you could sign up for a God account for $25 for the 2 weeks.
So I was actually going to ask you, Quinn, or Jeff, at the beginning here. You had said that February 13th is the super qualifier, and previously they had given like one, it was like a week preview to say, hey, we're going to be having God accounts, and then you get to have them for 2 weeks and then the event was at the end, or the events were at the end of the weeks. So theoretically, if it's the 13th, we would already know, and we would already either have the God accounts or they would be coming out. So
you'd assume, but instead these ones are ending on Wednesday.
Yeah. So I'm not, maybe they're not, I don't know. Maybe it just goes back to like that throw shit at the wall and see what sticks strategy that they were taking with, all these things in the first place, but
yeah, I mean, I can respect that, especially if they're playing around with stuff with like Magic Online, like, you know, like if they want to do God accounts, if they want to throw up like, I don't know, a weird format or something, like this is absolutely the time to do it. I'm just hoping they have like, you know, Eternal Weekend timing and they're going to announce, oh shit, I forgot to press, you know, release on the God account newsletter.
Maybe.
Anyways, God accounts in general.
So
what do you think?
So just to be clear, we all got them, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, and like for me, like I played two decks. That's all I played. I played really sweet, nice art, like old school original art when I played Rug Delver, so I wasn't like, it was nice and aesthetically pleasing.
I definitely changed my D&T deck to have the Wastelands that I don't own and the ports that I don't own on Magic Online.
Yeah, all of my duels and fetches were like original borders. I didn't do that thing where everyone chooses like the fancy expeditions. I didn't do any of that, but I just went with like all OG, like nice card frames, which was pleasing.
I get this is subjective, but my subjective opinion is that the expeditions look like shit online.
Oh, any foil looks like complete dog shit online.
When you look at like an actual expedition, like I get it if you're like, I don't like that they don't match or whatever, like, you know, but like if you pick up, especially the original, like Misties and like all the fetch lands, like if you look at that, and you're like, this doesn't look cool in a vacuum. Like, I think we just hard disagree on how aesthetic should be, but like online, it's just like pixelated and you're like, ugh.
Yeah, if you have the foil animation turned on too, it's just going shh, shh, shh.
Yeah.
My land is summoning sick. Yeah. So I did like all the old arts, which was nice. But I basically played the Rug Delver deck, a couple different variations of it. And then I played Painter once or twice, which was fun and I enjoyed.
Didn't you buy into Rug Delver online?
Yeah, I did.
I can get that second Force of Negation now.
Well, what I had done is I bought into Rug Delver except for the six Force of Will effects and two submerges. And I was basically like, I'm waiting to try and like time the market for like when the prices tank on some of these things. So like they just announced the other day that there's going to be flashback drafts for Modern Horizons with the Force Negations in it. So I'm just like, sweet, I've got my tickets waiting. I'm going to buy it when it gets cheap. And I just refuse to buy some of these cards when they're like, because cards can really spike on Magic Online.
Magic Online's nonsense for card prices. The problem is the flashbacks will barely even hit it though, because almost everybody that does the drafts are likely going to be doing Phantom. So you'll probably get like a little dip, but nothing big.
Yeah, anything now that they allow Phantom too, prices just don't drop as much. Mm-hmm. I guess they were getting like less people playing.
I mean, it really but used to be.
Before speed of the GameStop thing, you used to be like short around flashbacks.
Where you're like rent a bunch of Misties and sell them and then buy them back when the flashback's up.
So you just use all your points to rent like Force Negations. You sell them all like 2 days before the flashback drops, and then the flashback like makes the price go down a bit, and then you just buy them all back.
And then there's a bunch of Wall Street bet guys buying up all the Misties, and they jack the price, and you have to buy Misties back for like $5,000.
That's the exact same thing, right? You owe those Misties to somebody, and you have to replace them.
Pay up.
And that's why you all to go to patreon.com/thecanadianthreshold because I owe Mana Traders $2,000.
So like I definitely, I don't know. I want to talk about like some of the pros of the God accounts. I think we all like enjoyed them. It's nice to have it. some of the pros for me is like, it's very convenient other than having to like type out each card, because you can't just look through like your own little tiny collection. I don't have very many cards online, but like it's a bit of a bother there, but like you get to have all the different arts that you want. You get all the customization you want. It's super easy to switch around and play with decks. If you just import a list from like MTG Goldfish or Top 8, it just pops in and you can go and play a league like as soon as possible, which is great. I really like that part. What are some other things that people liked about the God accounts?
I mean, it's just like the overall concept of like having all the cards. Because even like, even if you're on Mana Traders or Card Hoarder, like the different tiers, card spike, you can't get them. You have to remember to like give them back, you know?
Yeah. Availability issues, like when Opposition Agent and Hullbreacher came out, it was like weeks, close to a month before they were on like Mana Traders or Card Hoarder.
Yeah, this is like literally any card you want to play except
Rick.
For Rick. Maybe I wanted to play D&T with Rick or Esper Glenn and I was denied. But other than that, yeah, you just play anything you want. You don't worry about it. You don't have to give the cards back later or remember to give the cards back. They just disappear after your last league. The convenience factor is huge. The brewing factor is awesome. I think it like... there's lots of people online playing weird things, which is like kind of interesting too. You run across decks and like configurations.
I did like that. Like you'll come across like, and you know it's someone who has one of the mythic tickets or whatever, because they're playing like the most out there trashy deck with like expeditions and stuff. And you're just like, okay, let's have some fun. So like that part's cool. The other part is like you get to also like grind tickets. So you pay like your $25 or whatever. And if you're playing a bunch, like you can actually like kind of like pull together some tickets and maybe buy some cards at the end of it, which is nice. But
that was also really good when they had Eternal Weekend last time and the God accounts. Slightly lesser this time, because this time you were forced to just grind like regular leagues or whatever. But Eternal Weekend had all those qualifier periods for different events. So like I had done, I think I like managed like 401 of those like random qualifiers, and then, you know, like 3-1 or 2-2 or something, another one. And just between that and placing like modestly okay in the event, like I got so many like event tickets, which I cashed for boosters, which I just sold straight for tickets. And like, you know, all of a sudden it was like, here we go. And being able to do that, you know, with marginal entry fees on those individual events, but just having like the account unlocked was huge. So it's kind of disappointing that, you know, the only thing I had going on was the super qualifiers instead of like some other kind of things. It's cool and it makes it seem a bit more like a little festival, you know, convention.
So that was going to be a question that I had for you, Jeff. Like you probably play the most of Magic Online. If they had like $50 a month, you get a mythic thing all the time, would you buy that? Or do you like the fact that it's kind of like this limited time, only now, like, and there's an event at the end? Like, do you like that aspect of it? Or would you rather just like not have to own any cards and do whatever you want?
It's tough, because I think my like knee-jerk answer is like, oh yeah, like go to like some kind of subscription based, you know, model where you just have everything. But the brain part of me knows that as soon as I'm exposed to that ice cream for dinner, that Sega Genesis all weekend, for, you know, too long, I'm just not going to keep up with it enough to do it. And it kind of loses the shine. The benefit of them doing it at specific times is like you pull in so many people that maybe aren't on there normally, or if people are on there normally, you kind of have this mental like, I gotta be here now, like this is where the party's at. And that's really cool. Like Quinn said, you start seeing all these, you know, weird decks show up, bunch of names you never played against, people trying just bizarre configurations, because like, why not? I would like for them to even go a little bit further with the accounts and like reduce, if they reduce the entry fee to the tournament to like just the God account ticket, like that would rule so hard. Like, I don't think there's really that much wrong they can do by just lowering the barrier of entry for this stuff, because they're still raking in money on this stuff, like hand over fist. So toss some other events in, maybe get a free league entry or something when you get it, you know, just anything to incentivize like people playing, because those people will come back and will spend money if it's mm-hmm. on buying tickets from you, or if it's on just buying these account things in the future.
If there was a thing that, like, let's say it was like the legacy 2 weeks or whatever, like the little mini legacy festival, and it was like you got two free entries to legacy leagues, and like it only worked, the God account was incentivized for strictly legacy, and then like, you know, a month later there was one that was like the modern festival, and you could still play on like a legacy thing, but if you did it for modern, you would get like,
right now you'd have 80% of your decks if it was only modern cards.
You just need to buy lands, they're cheap.
But like you still got the God account, mm-hmm. but it was labeled as like the modern festival. So like you would get entries and things into modern events, and it would like make people incentivized to go play that more. But then like for the legacy one, it was like people, you're trying to bring in other people from other formats into.
That would be sick.
Legacy.
That would be so cool. Like I would go play formats that I don't normally play, you know, just based on branding alone.
So, Quinn, do you have any other pros before we jump to some cons about the God accounts?
I was just going to say, like, your hypothetical pricing thing, like, at $50 a month, I don't think I actually like playing a variety of decks enough to give up $600 a year when I would, like, at that point, if I was putting that much money in MTGO, I would just buy Infect and call mm-hmm. it a day.
Yeah.
And it's weird because it's still like obviously everything adds up over time. So if you have the liquid capital, like renting kind of never makes sense. Just paying someone else's mortgage, as my dad always says. But at like $20 a month, it's kind of like Netflix. I'm like, sure, I just pay $20 a month and I kind of forget about it. And when I use it, I'm happy. And when I don't feel bad. $50 a month. And I guess, I mean, obviously this scales with your income or how comfortable you are spending on certain things. $50 a month for me is still like a point where I'm like, oh, fuck, I should like play a league. You know, it's actually yeah, why I like Arena a lot, because I put very little money into it. I've kind of just put money in because I'm like, I use this all the time and I'm happy to just kind of throw money in to support it every once in a while to like play an extra draft or something when I screw up out too many times. But it's because there's like no commitment. And I'm like willing to put in money monthly for something I enjoy much more in Legacy, but it'd have to be like pretty low for me to actually just like, you know, park it away and come and go.
I think if all of the variety of subscription services, if they've shown us anything, it's like, if it's above $15 a month, like that's kind of the threshold. There's not too many things that exist outside that space. And based on the economy and the value that you're quote unquote getting with a God account, like, $15 is like, it basically would either drop prices or run all these third party companies out of house and home. It would do a bunch of things if it was like 10 or 15 bucks.
Well, I mean, but they can't actually do it on MTGO unless they want to like fundamentally alter the draft leagues. Cause it just like ruins the equity of the draft leagues is the problem.
Well, if every draft was Phantom Draft, and you just had a subscription fee.
Right.
But then that would happen. Oh, I guess, yeah. If like the subscription also covered Phantom Draft, that's interesting, actually.
Well, if they covered the
Phantom Draft would theoretically cost an entry and you would get, I don't know, some kind of support for it. But the prize payout would be less because there's obviously like no tickets to go spend things on, or the tickets would be different. But you wouldn't be keeping the cards at the end of the day because you have them all and you can have whatever you want.
Yeah.
It's a different model, and I'm sure there's some freaking bean counters on the back end trying to put some of these card holder and mana traders companies out of business. But like that might be a better model, honestly. If it was just like I get to play old Chandelar MTGO interface for $15 a month and use any card frame I want and get to play like high level legacy, it's like all of a sudden I'm just like, huh, that doesn't sound that bad at all. Like,
if it was $20 and you could also draft like anytime you wanted, I'm like, I'm 100% in.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like there's definitely been meetings at WotC about, you know, what to do about MTGO, and this has definitely been talked about. But I feel like it's really something...
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think the other part about free draft is that that eats into Arena, which I'm sure is like a no bueno, right?
Yeah. I think Magic Online's always been in an interesting spot since Arena came out, right? Where it's like, what level of support is going to be given? And it is really unique for the fact that you can actually like have substantial prizes like within the client that aren't just like, you know, I don't know, self-serving like coins or gems or whatever. Like you can win a tournament, you can get a set, you can redeem it for a paper set if you want, you can sell it for tickets, it's going to be sold for money. So you have this like kind of more tangible paper kind of
I guess, yeah, if the economy goes away, like what are the prizes? Because they can't give really, I guess they can give cash out because they've done that on Arena.
Mm-hmm. Well, at a certain point, if they have like 2 million subscribers all paying $15 a month, like you have, theoretically, you'll have value to like give out as prizes. And it's not necessarily that you need to charge like 2 ticket entry fee.
In some places, there are complications around that though, around like what constitutes gambling and stuff like that.
Right.
Whereas like they have got around that on MTGO and for the most part on Arena by being like you get like what you get back is an in-game currency. And on MTGO, like, yes, you can sell chests for tickets and you can sell tickets for money outside, but like we don't control that. But then in Arena, there are, I think there's like geographical and age restrictions on any of like the cash prize tournaments.
Well, even look at the Magic Online tournaments for qualifiers, and like Henry Middlestein or like any of his other like Zoomers not technically able to play. Was somebody playing on Arena as like Henry's mom or something?
Jacob Mayer. Jacob, apologies if I got your last name wrong. I'm gonna look it up after this. But Jacob's mom played Eternal Weekend because Jacob could not.
That's apparently
she
awesome.
she didn't do so hot. Although I hear she's an excellent Magic player, so you know, just an off day.
But anyways, I think it'd be interesting to see MTGO move to a subscription thing. I think just by virtue of like, it can't cost them much money to keep this laptop plugged into the corner to host it right now. I don't think they're looking at making really any large systemic changes to it. You know, things like doing these accounts are probably the closest they're going to get. I can't imagine they do it all the time because it really does eat up like the, you know, there's caution around like reserve list stuff in paper. And obviously there's not the same thing on Magic Online, but there is like, I think an acknowledgement, there's a real investment put into these digital non-existent pieces of cardboard that in a lot of cases costs as much or more than, you know, the actual ones.
That's a question. What do they do for everyone who has cards?
Yeah.
Like they don't owe anyone anything, but like obviously they are incentivized to not, like burn, you know, millions of dollars worth of bridges with some of their biggest fans.
If I had to place my bet, it's just going to keep running, you know, 90% as what it is until it just dies.
I think you would. So I was going to say what would be interesting is if we were in this whole like subscription model and you're paying $15 a month and you got access to everything and you could do drafts and cards and things like that. And you brought up the point of like, well, what about standard and what about drafting? I would say that new set drafting happens on Arena.
On Arena only, flashbacks and, are on MTGO.
And flashbacks and cubes happen on MTGO.
The good shit.
All the cool, like, Eternal stuff is, like, on MTGO, and you just pay $15 a month. And it kind of creates, like, this fork where you have, like, whatever it is, historic and the newer stuff on Arena that's flashy. And then you've got all the cool, like, legacy Eternal stuff on MTGO. And you can, one's free to play, and you can grind, and you can pay some money. And the other one is just you pay a flat fee, and you get access to everything. And then if you want to do a cube draft or whatever, you pay a couple bucks. And like, to be fair, like that could be kind of cool. to get there, to your point of like, what do they owe all these people? I think you'd have two options. You either just say, we're taking the Band-Aid off, come sue us, or you would continually kind of fluctuate back and forth between these God accounts to the point where it just screwed over these companies who like have all this stuff, and it disenfranchised them enough that then they just say, well, here's the option, here's what we're doing, and you've like dropped the value enough that it's not such a big hit. But yeah, some of these companies who own like hundreds of thousands of dollars of digital items that they rent out to people and have a whole system and infrastructure and employees, like that's hard. And maybe it's a good time to transfer to the cons of God accounts, honestly. And the first point that I had was just like, it's bad for third parties. So all these companies who have all these assets that they could literally sell for tickets to someone else, to the greater fool, and get American dollars and walk away, like, it's bad for them. And the thing that I particularly like about these third parties existing is that it incentivizes them to like hold events and third party things to like make people use their cards and use their services. So it's kind of like SCG almost of online, where they're like have this like these leagues or these series, and there's prizes. And it's not just the computer in the corner at Wizards like offering up these events for us to go to a Mythic Qualifier or Championship, Elder Dragon, Highlander, that no one's going to go to anyway because it's not Legacy. So like, I like the idea of the third parties existing, and I don't like the ideas of the God accounts ruining that structure, particularly for like the older formats that don't get the love and support.
I don't want to sound like the Monopoly man, but like, I don't... I don't wish any like managers or card holder like ill will or anything, you know. They, like you said, they've run some cool events, but like they're constrained by this weird MTGO market that is like totally imperfect as far as markets go. And WotC can like, they can literally they're the central bank, so yeah, they can provide a service at a cheaper rate, and if that's what happens, I don't think that's a negative. There's a consequence. I don't know if it's a con that I would like at all. If someone was like, this is what's on the table, are you worried about this? At that point, I'm like, no, sorry.
I think the direct con is something like a managed fitter series, which would go away if, you know, they're not getting the funding for rental accounts. Card Hoarder isn't doing anything like that, but they are just like a bunch of really good people. I know when the COVID stuff started hitting, they were just started like offering like lower rates to people that couldn't make, you know, rental payments or whatever. Like if you just talk to them, they just like help you out, because it's like, hey man, shit sucks and Magic's cool, so let's do what we can.
Again, they might be good people.
Yeah, but, like, that's not like counter
my company. Your- my company did that too. Like,
I think most companies did that. Service. It's just customer retention.
It wasn't the goodness of our hearts. Yeah, it was like, how do we retain these people? Because we're also worried that our like business is going to go away.
Oh, for sure. That's why I meant like the main like tangible loss out of that would be like the Mana Traders series, like tournaments that are funded by these rental accounts. Is that sufficient? Is that okay?
Yeah, no, that's fine. And that kind of goes to like that. That potential future universe where there's like a $15 a month fee and there's all sorts of events and it's geared towards strictly Eternal, like Modern, Legacy, Cube, Vintage players, and I guess Commander. And like there's tournaments and events, and it's totally divorced from the drafting and Standard and all that stuff. So ideally in that world, there's more support and there's cooler things happening for Legacy, and it's not like a forgotten format. And I wouldn't be sad about the loss of a Mana Traders and their series. But to me, it's in like the near term, it is a con. The other con that I see with this, or the God accounts in general, is both less so now, but more so in normal times. But it does, in my mind, detract a little bit from the paper community. When sometimes when people are like, I don't want to go out tonight, I'm just going to play Magic online, and just like click, click, click. And you don't
Do you think it's a real? Yeah.
There are people like that for sure. But I don't think, I think for every person you have like that, you have someone who's going to get sucked into the money hole that we are all trapped in. Like, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened. And, you know, in the absence of a ManaTrader series, there's like the Canadian Threshold Patreon series or something, or the Lotus Box series. Right. And I met Jeff, and Jeff was like, you should come to Stronghold. So I'm going to Stronghold, and he lent me a deck, and now I'm saving all my money to buy dual lands instead of GameStop stocks, and which is bad for my future, but I don't care.
I appreciate Tundras. This future in which I have a deck to lend somebody.
I'm just trying to be positive. We're kind of out of COVID, and I've been negative for a couple of things. I'm trying to be positive about your future, Jeff. I don't know.
I do want to agree with what you're saying, yeah. Like, completely. I have big issue with McBain as listing this as a realistic con. I don't think there's a very large percent of people that are getting ripped away from paper events in the event they're happening.
We've talked since March about what the best part of Magic. And, like, I haven't played a ton. I know we joked about, like, the ice cream for dinner thing, and I actually thought I might do that, and I kind of did it the first time. Maybe it's partially because of how the meta is shaping up. It's also partially because I play decks I don't know how to play, and I've been like shitting away value. But like, if I don't have like an adult commitment on a Thursday night, you know, and this was before I knew that there would be a period of a year where year plus where I couldn't go play Magic of Stronghold, I was just like, it's Thursday, like I'm playing a Magic of Stronghold.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Liz knows that. Like, if she was like, hey, can you skip this on Thursday? There's like a great reason. And I'm like, if she asks, I'm like, yes, must be very important to you. Like, absolutely, I'll do it. Because otherwise, it's just like Thursday, Magic. Yeah. I sit down, I play Magic. Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I don't think, like, this game has survived for this long. It's not because of Magic Online.
Well, yeah, it's in spite of Magic Online sometimes. Yeah.
So the other one that I had in terms of cons, at least from like viewing it as like, let's say the 6 month period or the time in between these god accounts existing, just on a Magic Online perspective, if you don't have the deck, like if Quinn doesn't have Infect Online and he can't just like log in and play a league with his Infect deck whenever he wants, Quinn's going to go play Arena. Because he doesn't have to invest any money, and it just like he's going to go do that. And you don't have, from a Magic Online perspective, skin in the game, in that you've got some tickets, you've got some money down, and you've got the cards, and you can play when you want. And you're not like an enfranchised player with your dual lands or whatever. And the God accounts don't really incentivize you to build a collection necessarily. Like, you can, but you could theoretically just wait for these god accounts to come around, and then when they're not around, you just go play other things, like other Paper Legacy or Arena or anything else. But you lose that kind of buy-in, skin in the game component. So I'm kind of grasping at straws in terms of the negatives or cons, but I think it is still something.
I respect you're going for balance. I don't think we need to do that necessarily.
Fair and balanced.
Like, I just think it's like, as they stand right now, and I think if they, you know, if they start to happen on a regular basis, there are questions about like what happens to the people who have lots of money tied up. And I do actually give a shit about that. And like, I mean, I think the managers one is like, even though I said I'm not particularly about that, I do like, that's the one where I'm like, yeah, that is like shitty. But like, I don't know, if someone wants to drop in and play Legacy once in a while, like, I don't know, like, water's warm, come on in, like, we need you at this point, you know?
We've always needed them. We've always been on the hunt for new people, new blood.
Yeah, it's like we all know, they call it cardboard crack for a reason. You just need a little taste. And now you're, I don't know. I came back, I remember playing Commander and being like, I can't buy this card, it's $10. And we opened the show with me being like, yeah, I bought a Volcanica. I just snapped it off because, like, you know, going up in price.
Oh, I got that. Like, I'm not gonna
quote. I got a great price for it. I'm not going to quote it, but I got a great price that would have made, you know, 2011 me getting back into Magic be like, I'm sorry, you did what? I don't know. It's just, I think anything you can expose people to legacy is good. And like, this is the one of the best ways of doing it. I don't think there's any downsides.
I think right now too, if you can sink hooks in people trying these god accounts as just the, you know, wandering in, let's see what the buzz is about. If they, you know, something bites into them, which I mean, honestly, right now in legacy, it's a hard time for that to happen. I think it's a big net positive once you actually paper play together. I'd love to see some of the random like local guys that are also kind of more Magic grinders and maybe not legacy people get more into paper legacy when it starts again, just from the online experience for a year.
So I got one comment on that, and then maybe we'll move to our close. But for me, it's like legacy's right on that cusp of you can have these format tourists come in, try it. Maybe they're coming from some kind of more standard thing or modern, and they're finally wanting to move over. And it's right in that realm of like, it's kind of sort of possible and you can slowly buy in and things like that. But there's been a lot of crazy stuff going on right now. And if we tried to use this argument and we were talking about, oh, God accounts are good for vintage because it lets people come in and check out vintage and then like buy into vintage, I think vintage is like far enough out. Yeah, Jeff's like, whoa. Like it's far enough out there that you're like, that's not going to happen. Or that that's going to happen for 1 in 1,000 people. And is it 1 in 100 people for legacy and 1 in 10 people for modern? Like, does it scale down like that? Or like, what is that threshold? And at what point does the bar move over on legacy? And it like, you can have format tourists come in and be like, well, this is a cool format. And then go and look and be like, an underground sea is what now? And I need 3 of them. I'm sorry.
I think the best thing anybody's hoping for, I think it's a really accurate point. But I think all I'm hoping and advocating for is people basically to put like butts in seats. Like whether or not they have a deck, whether or not they buy in, if this results in, you know, us getting 10 more people at the weekly and they're borrowing decks or they're playing some, you know, whatever, like that's what it's about. To me,
I think if you get to a point where it's like vintage too, like paper's kind of moot, right? It's not the thing that's holding back legacy from like staying alive at a certain point. Like, you know, when it gets to like a, you know, playable vintage Black Lotus is what, like 10 grand probably now minimum. I haven't kept up with all the price spikes, but like, let's say $7,000 on like the low end. Like, it doesn't matter what happens. We're just going to start losing players. And if you're coming from that perspective, the only place the format's going to survive is online. And like, yes, maybe you have people who drop in only when there's God accounts, but for like people who did that, there's also going to be people who are like, oh, you know what? I can't afford an underground sea, but I can afford like $400 and I'll wait for the forces, you know, to get cheap. And I'll rent those when I can or borrow them from someone else, you know, who's not using MTGO right now. It's still gonna put virtual butts in seats. So like, no matter what, it's just, like legacy is a great format, even right now when it's at probably like one of the low points for when I've played it. I think still like the best format in Magic. And like, if you like Magic, like skill intensive, interactive Magic, you play legacy and you're like, holy shit, like this is like the best thing ever. Nam, I think is a great case.
Yeah, I would agree with that actually. Yeah, like he's still probably like triple queuing for everything, but for an individual like himself to say like, you know, I've played a lot of stuff, I play everything there is, anything that has a competitive edge to it, and I still love the play patterns and the style of Legacy. It's cool.
Yeah, like I think Nam would like to be able to play Magic as a professional. And if that's the case, he doesn't really, is not incentivized to play Legacy, but he like came on the show and was like, yeah, I play Legacy because it's fucking fun. And like, I think that's what you get when you have these kinds of scenarios where it's got accounts.
All right. Have we
long
it?
Pause?
I think there's like, just to close, I think there's another discussion and I'd like to have in the future at some point about like the quote unquote God accounts of paper, which is like proxies, and what do those mean? It's a conversation for another day, but I think there's a lot of parallels with this online world versus the paper world. But that's a conversation for another day. To move to our final section, that's gas. Jeff, you're at the, I'm not going to throw it to you this time, Quinn.
Big Bane stop driving the bus.
Okay,
I'm ready this time.
We need to take charge. Quinn, who's gas this week?
We've given this organization tons of shit, especially over the last 2 years. But WotC's gas. They're curators of the game we love. For all the shit we give, they do great things too. And today, I think it's apropos to say that I think God accounts for gas. And it'll also be gas if they ban Ogo on a Monday. Just throwing it in there. Ian Duke, if you're out there, join our Patreon and ban Ogo. Jeff, who's gas?
I just want to say that Jay France is gas, creator of the amazing bluestew.net. This is a sweet project that's a lot of fun and says a couple things about the format. I know the general D&T, you know, Twitter culture was already discording or talking about, oh my God, I'm tripping all over my words. I'm talking about a D&T stew, which Elliot had actually suggested, since it's a white stew, it should be called chowder, which is a good idea.
Chowder.
But, you know, you just take the core D&T and then you just shuffle in random cards from the box of bullshit. And this is a great idea. I love it. Anyways, Jay France, cool guy. I don't have his Twitter at. It's something different right now. Plays Legacy Online. This is a sweet thing that's very funny and has generated a lot of good conversations and a lot of extra trash in leagues right now.
And
from Seattle too, right?
I think so.
I don't know.
They are also an unofficial/official sponsor of the show.
So they don't know it or not. But they're running.
They don't know it, but we have a commercial for it, and we'd like to thank them for their support.
Oh, I do also want to add one thing. When Quinn and I were streaming, which we didn't talk about at all this time, playing the good old didgeridoo, and didgeridoo not doing great.
That was freaking awful.
We didgeridoo did it.
That laugh was very generous. Somebody had earnestly, I believe, asked in the Twitch chat about our Patreon. I want to make it clear, we do not have a Patreon. You do not have to pay us for this schlock. You want to send us emails? That's great. We love it. We love to read it. We love to see it. We're not accepting your money currently, and I don't think we will.
We will accept your time, which is worth money. Would you join us when we stream? Because that's always like, that was super fun. We had like more people that weren't just people we'd know in real life, which was like, yeah, it was a really good time.
We're kind of like the God accounts of legacy podcasts, really. Like, you just get unlimited access. You get to listen to everything. There's no paywall. There's no nothing.
You're getting everything account. You ever wanted.
Yeah. Like, what could go wrong? So my that's gas, that's gas Ian Duke. I've had some close conversations with him the last few days. We've been talking about which cards to ban. We've been going back and forth a little bit. I'm surprised at the cards that he's considering right now. I didn't think that like some of them would be on his like his watch list right now, but I'm pretty excited for his upcoming announcement. And I'm not going to spoil anything right now, but again, big thanks to Ian Duke. That's gas. Like, you're really saving the format. Thank you.
I feel like I can tell sometimes there's like a bit you have, and I feel like you're reading off a little notepad script that you wrote. Like, you're like workshopping with this. I love it. It's so good.
I literally just pulled that out of nowhere.
Well,
I had nothing until the second before.
I certainly hope we can gas Ian Duke soon.
So
yeah, maybe just prescient and he's actually like got it lined up for tomorrow morning. Who knows?
We did WotC, we did Ian, we did Jay France, who in addition to like creating some sick legacy memes, also is kind of shining a spotlight on maybe where Ian should be looking. We'll see how this turns out. This will come out later this week, and maybe the weekend after you, or the Monday after you listen to this, around lunchtime, a little bit after, depending on when they get back, we'll hear some good news. Anything else?
I was just going to point out that it would almost be, now that I'm really thinking about it in my conversation with Ian, like, Jay Franz might be a little bit annoyed because he's done all this hard work to like make this Blue Stew thing. And then Ian's just going to go and change it all. Like, he's going to have to reprogram the whole thing. Like, this might be kind of like a little archive of like a legacy from a time of yore. And you can go back to the Blue Stew page and randomize a bunch of decks and be like, oh, the good old days. Remember back then when the fire philosophy was burning strong and we could days undoing to our heart's content. Like, it'll be neat to have this as like a little, you know, bookend on the legacy COVID format of yesterday.
Nostalgia.
I'm gonna cast more days undoings if there's no Okos. I'm going ham on combo decks. I'm just letting you all know.
I feel
less bad about it because there's more fair stuff.
As a close, I can't remember who had it. I think it was like Drew Levin or something like that. But he had like a Time Twister proxy for his cube. And he just had a Days Undoing where he just took a Sharpie and crossed out the bottom line of the card. It's just like, that is perfect. Like, that's what I should be playing in old school. Why do I need this like collector edition Time Twister? Okay.
They're like $1,200 now.
Apparently.
All right. I think we're done. Thank you for listening. As always, we'll see you in two thresholds where we're hopefully doing a look back on the Oko era of Legacy, but we'll see what happens.
All right. Thanks, dudes.
Good night, everyone.
Blue Stew, a better way to brew.